This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success.
Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer. And like I said, we have the richest hosts I've had in a while, rich in love, rich in heart, rich in mind. We have someone that we can have join our team because this guy attracts the best of the best. Josh Luber is here. He is the co-founder originally of StockX and of Fanatics Collectibles, which means Dan Gilbert and Michael Rubin were partners of his. And I always judge people by the company that they keep. And there must be something about a recovering lawyer who can attract the greatest entrepreneurs in the world to partner with them that I want to know. So when I found out that Josh Luber had invited me to go tour StockX, I did not waste a minute to go see how this guy was attracting all of the heroic entrepreneurs in the world, because that's what I aspired as well in my career in sports and then as an entrepreneur. I think this panel, these hosts speak for itself in the same realm. Josh Luber, welcome to Office Hours.
Thank you very much for having me.
I want to get right to it with the laws of attraction. You know, everybody dreams of meeting certain people, and yet they don't have the opportunity, the option, or the gumption to present in front of them or convince those type of peoples, not just to hang out with them, but to invest in them. Those are two of the biggest entrepreneurs in the world, Dan Gilbert and Rubin. What do you think it is about you, can't just be having a law degree, that was not only
that's
able-
probably a negative, by the
right,
way.
Right, I agree. Yeah. That's why I usually tell people I have one. But, but you know, literally, like so many people dream to surround themselves with the people that we are blessed to surround ourselves with. What do you think in your personality or character allowed you to not only attract, but have those people invest in you?
You know, I met Dan in 2015. And so what's this, 9 years now that I've been on this journey? This is the first time anyone asked me that question or anything kind of remotely like that question. So I appreciate the thought that maybe there is something about me or something I've done to do that. I think in a lot of ways, I was in the right place at the right time. You know, we hit this time where culture and commerce were converging, and I'm very much sort of the everyman of my generation. You know, I grew up collecting sneakers and trading baseball cards, and then our generation got to the point where we were the consumers and now we're the creators of these businesses. And so I think that those guys and maybe other people that we've partnered with just kind of see that we truly know these markets and we understand them. And, you know, yeah, I was a lawyer, I was a JD MBA, I have other startups, you know, I was, you know, consider myself a business person. And then we intersect with culture and commerce as those things are becoming bigger industries and happen to be on the forefront of it just because we were truly the consumers of those products.
Interesting.
I got to ask you one question. And you got to be real honest with me and help me understand this. How did you like being interrogated by Michael Rubin? Now, you guys don't know Michael. Have you ever had a conversation?
No.
Hey, dude. It's kind of like talking to Johnny Cochran. Before you can answer that question, I'm going to ask you another question. And every time you get ready to open your mouth, I'm going to ask you another question.
And I'm scared. So
I'm just,
then
I
get in the room with Mike Rubin. Yeah. I want
to answer anymore. You got to tell me, because I want to know, because I was in the room with Michael Rubin. And you have to tell me, how did you do that?
You know, by the way, everyone should know, he and I have never met before. We've never discussed. Mm. So the fact that you knew that that was our first interaction shows you what we know about Michael Rubin and how he gets information and how he... He and I had met briefly through when I was at StockX, through Dan Gilbert, NBA owners. We'd met very briefly, but had never spent much time with him. And then in 2 days before Thanksgiving of 2020, we had a phone call, a very brief phone call, and he cut it short. And he's like, I need to know more. I'm going to fly to Detroit and we'll sit down. And I say, okay. And so the day before Thanksgiving, 2020, flies to Detroit. And the two of us sat in a room together for 6 hours, just the two of us, no one else. And the interrogation part, and this is in the interest of understanding the trading card market, as I had left StockX and was pursuing the business in trading cards that would resemble, or at least in my mind, would resemble what we created at Fanatics Collectibles. So he's trying to learn about the trading card market. I'm basically pitching that I think there's a large market here and the business that I thought we could create. But the interrogation part was the first 45 minutes. Every question was focused on how big is the market? And he wants numbers, right? It's how big and what number, what? And finally I said, Michael, I don't know. I can't tell you how big the market is, but it's really, really big and it's getting much bigger. There were a lot of expletives in there as well. I don't know where we are in this show, but and finally he said, okay. Okay. And at that point, I think after 45 minutes, just going back and forth to understand the nuances that he bought my premise. And then we sort of moved on to the business part of it, but it was absolutely an interrogation. And it was, I think as every person, every business person at that level wants to understand, is this market big enough for me to spend my time on it and put my energy towards this? And that's what he was trying to understand.
That's interesting. With your acquisition of Topps and experience with the NBA and different playing cards, and as a child, you said you would trade cards and sneakers and buy them. How has the emergence of the non-fungible tokens begin to impact the market, the size of the market, the speed at which the market moves, and who collects these tokens and our cards?
Yeah. Look, the interesting part about the creation of Fanatics Collectibles, which is now the largest licensee of all trading cards and has, you know, baseball and many other licenses and will shortly have basketball and football, is that we were in the process of collecting those licenses and acquiring those licenses at the time when NFTs became a thing and started to take off and go through the extraordinary growth that we all know that happened in 20 and 21. And then we were then building the business while they were on the other side of that and starting to come down and do that. But it was very clear from the beginning that they will be relevant. And whether you call them NFTs or you call them digital collectibles or, you know, you just call them digital assets in any way, that experience will be built into all trading cards in the foreseeable future in some way. I think we may be a long time away before they are at the scale and size that we thought they might once be, but that's also for the crypto market in general, I think.
Yeah. I'm really intrigued because this is a world that I'd love to get in the brain of someone like you. Is it, with everything you've been involved with collectibles, I mean, I've still got binders, right, in a basement of baseball cards that I collected when I was young.
Where do you live? We come in your house. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I always got it. It's like I would host card shows with my friends.
Yeah.
You know, and I love like bundling up these mystery packs, you know, and shoving like a good card in with the, like 20 bad cards. You know, but it intrigues me because I never quite grasped the concept and how those trends go, and maybe you can illuminate me here today. It's like art, right? People are, the value of art is really what people are willing to pay for it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, everything that we're talking about here, whether it's trading cards, sneakers, streetwear, toys, you know, watches, handbags, all these products, I mean, it's all just supply and demand. I mean, this is Econ 101 at its most basic, right? And the brands have spent decades becoming amazing stewards at scarcity, of how Nike intentionally limits products, of how Louis Vuitton intentionally limits who can buy certain products. Trading cards are the most obvious example of this because they've taken it to the farthest extreme, frankly, how it should be in terms of transparency, which is most trading card packs have on them the odds of every potential card you can get. And then the cards themselves are often numbered. You have many that aren't numbered, but you're trying to find the one that's numbered to 100 or numbered to 10 or numbered to 5. And the one that's numbered to 5 or the 101, well, that's clearly the most valuable because it's the most scarce. So trading cards have taken it to that logical extreme. And there's many other industries that should have that same level of transparency, because if you're dealing with supply and demand driven products, right, that level of transparency is what creates efficient markets, creates trust, creates, you know, a safe place to conduct that, because you want to understand, is this thing truly scarce? Is it truly rare? Because that's what drives value and demand.
To that measure, since we're videotaping this for historical and financial purposes, this is one of the first ghost rights. And I thank you for my child's education. That probably will be equal to this amazing toy.
And if you look at the bottom under the foot, it has the transparency. There's 50 of those that exist.
Wow.
That was the first one that we actually sold. It was a friends and family release that we did not too long ago. We only sold 20 of them. It was not open to the public, but Ghost will be available in like July, August timeframe. We'll start selling them. But we've been creating Ghosts for our friends, our family, our business partners, and for about 8 months now, and we'll continue
on that
to do
list,
that,
brother. So, please, yeah. I would gladly respond with baseball cards of any kind, just for posterity's sake. There, and it's interesting because I, you know, got into spirituality off of the premise of trading, meaning that the woman who taught me theta meditation and quantum healing said, "I can raise your awareness through meditation and this quantum type of mindset." Because things vibrate and awareness is relative to your vibration or frequency. And then she said, "Would you like to come to my workshop?" I'm like, "I don't have time. Yeah, I don't have time to meditate." And then she said, "Oh, that's too bad, because I could teach you when to buy or sell. I could raise your awareness when to buy or sell." I said, "That's valuable." And when I speak with you, you have great simplicity and clarity on how markets are made. And I think it's really interesting, your question, that 45 minutes was spent on understanding the size of the market. And it, once he established the credibility of the size of the market, then he could determine the supply and demand, which you control. Yep. And like you said, it's amazing how many people get so busy they forget to make money, when there is the classic Econ 101 that you can provide a commodity, have a limited supply of that commodity, and build demand for that commodity and elevate the price over perceived value.
Yep. And look, that, I mean, that's very much what we're trying to do with Ghost Rate. I mean, this is a collectible toy. For anyone who's aware of the toys Bear Bricks, this is the same idea as a Bear Brick. But this is taking everything that we've learned about scarcity, about building demand from trading cards and from sneakers and from these other industries, and applying it to an industry that has not had this. You know, collectible toys are sort of in between toys and art. They sit, you know, in this sort of start. You have a lot of real artists that will create toys, like Kaws and Murakami, and these artists that create collectibles. And we get to take all of that and apply it to a place that hasn't had that before. And that's really what we're doing. Ghost Rate.
You're doing a great job at it. Thanks. A true entrepreneur, setting the standard and the market in many different times. It's easy to do it once. You can say it was coincidence or luck, but to do it as many times as Josh Luber has, you know he's the real deal. Thank you for my retirement or my kids' education. Please come back bearing gifts to me and my friends at any time. The incredible Josh Luber, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Office Hour.
Thanks, guys.